Hello everyone and a warm welcome back to Footprints. The UK's largest free celebration of nature returns to Bristol and Bath from the 7th to the 15th of June, and the theme of the festival this year is water. So naturally we thought we'd feature the River Avon and the Kennet and Avon Canal in this June episode of Footprints. We will meander along the river from Newbridge to Bath Eastern and hear about the new Bath River Line project. We'll find out about the state of the health of our rivers and about a new monitoring project underway and what we can do to help. But first, let's go for a boat ride. The Rivers and Canal Trust volunteers are out on their workboat Sulis twice a week, keeping the waterways clear of rubbish and weeds. I met up with them on a gloriously sunny day as they were taking their boat up to its summer mooring on the canal. They cover the River Avon from Hannam to Bath and then the Kennet and Avon Canal from Bath to Dundas Aqueduct. I met them at Saltford Lock and we hear first from skipper Bill.
Oh, engine's on. Looks like we're going to get going. Tell me what you do on this boat.
The boat's used for carrying equipment, use it as a base for working from, towing sometimes, but we carry a lot of things like paint, tools, anything we need really to do the day's work, which could be lock maintenance, painting, scraping, vegetation clearance, tree cutting. We've got, we can saw limbs off trees where we need to where they've fallen onto the river. Rubbish clearance, we do a lot of rubbish clearance as well, which nobody else seems to do, including places like the embankment below the Bath Spa railway station. That gets covered in litter and cans, bottles, and once or twice a year we go and clear that as well.
You're all volunteers on this boat?
We are, every one of us. Yeah, every one of us.
Well, there's a boat just behind us. Describe that boat. It looks like a sort of plastic rib to me.
Community Spirit, that boat's called. It's a plastic whaley boat with a brand new engine on the back because we lost the boat. It was stolen a while back and the engine had disappeared off the back of it. It's 20 horsepower Honda, if anybody's seen it. But
Tell me about that.
Well, the boat was moored at Hannam and it was chained to this boat, the big Sulis. This is a much bigger 35-ton steel boat. And it was chained to Sulis, but we arrived one day to find CS missing. We call it CS, Community Spirit. The boat had completely disappeared, but was recovered, found by Bristol Harbour Authority underneath the suspension bridge, which is a good few miles. It travelled all that way.
So you mean it had drifted down the Avon?
On a couple of tides, a couple of spring tides. It beached itself underneath the Clifton Suspension Bridge, and the next tide would have taken it out into the Severn Estuary, into the Bristol Channel, so we would have lost it, almost certainly. So we were very lucky, because it's quite an expensive boat, and it's community funded. It would have been a great shame to lose it. We've had it for probably 6 to 7 years now.
So it had an adventure that none of you guys would have had, being exactly. Pushed over a weir and floated down to Bristol.
And it went down a waterway that we're not allowed anywhere near, of course, because no boat is, and that's the new cut in Bristol, so it managed all that by itself.
Wow, Community Spirit. It's community well spirit. Named,
yeah,
isn't it?
Had a good old some travels.
So does Sulis that we're stood on, does Sulis live here at Saltford Lock?
No, not at all. Sulis is heading back to Bath now. Its home base is Top Lock on the Bath Lock flight, just below Top Lock Hut there. It's got its own little kind of cul-de-sac. We moor it up and it hasn't been back there for 2 months now.
So it's been living on the river, dealing with the river, and now what
and
it's going to do now?
Yeah, and dealing with locks, sorting out locks, putting down these boards you see here, things like that, new deck boards on the landing stages, painting and maintaining locks.
Teas and coffees, anyone?
Yes, please.
What would you like?
White coffee.
White coffee, thanks.
We're in this lock, but what's that? What's he doing over there?
Well, we've got a long-handled fish in there, so we're just pulling some rubbish out of the water. So we've got a variety of nets on board. And so part of our job is to especially get plastic pollution out of the river.
And do you find much?
A fair bit, yeah, especially after the winter, because all the floods bring it all downstream. And often you actually see it about 6 foot up in the trees.
Really?
So you look for birds and all you see is detritus.
So you're not just looking in the river, you're looking on the banks and you're looking up above.
Yeah, that's one of our advantages of our little boat there. It can go right up into the bank under the trees, so we can pull stuff out that this boat can't really access.
And I noticed somebody was doing a bit of what I would call gardening over there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a never-ending task. I mean, this is one of the things about why I think we're a useful group. Because if volunteers don't look after this and do a little bit of work a couple of times a week, it will all just degenerate and you'll have to start the restoration all over again.
I think, you know, as general public, we just have no idea what's really going on to make everything beautiful, do we?
Well, I would like the general public to learn more about the Canal and River Trust, because we need more funding. You know, the government has cut back on our funding, and if that happens, parts of the network will just close down.
Bill, I've just noticed we haven't gone anywhere and the back gates have opened again. What's happening?
Yeah, for some strange reason, the lock isn't filling. So we've got to kind of work out what the heck the problem is.
Stuck in a lock.
It might be a bit of a branch or tree jammed in the lock gate lower down it's not closing properly. Or it might
someone going to have to dive in?
Well, no. What we'll just try and do is reopen the lock and try and flush whatever it is through. See if that works. Give that a try. And if that doesn't work, then we'll have to come up with a plan B. whatever that might be. Yeah, no idea at the moment.
Okay, well, watch this space.
That gap still looks pretty big.
And your range, I think you said, was from Canesham to Dundas?
And all the way to Dundas. So 13 locks in total. Lock 1 is Hannam Lock, and then we're at lock 7 now. So, and then we're going on to Bath, which will be, but then we'll leave the river eventually at Bottom Lock on the Wigcombe flight and head up. Yeah, it's quite a big stretch.
So we're going to see quite a lot of river today and a bit of canal.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly, you'll see a bit of both. And the bits, you'll see Deep Lock as well, which is quite something, the second deepest lock in the country. I think it misses being the deepest lock by 2 inches, an inch and a half, something like that.
Well, I look forward to that. Oh, look, the gates are opening. We're off.
Hi, I'm Mike Ashburn, and I'm currently the lead volunteer of the Bath Work Boat Group.
And so you're in charge today?
I'm nominally in charge, but the way I like to do it is, you know, there are people on this boat that are much more experienced than me, so I try to organise things, but I rely very heavily on those that have got more life experience, this sort of thing. We've got engineers, we've got a nuclear submarine engineer, we've got haulage repair guys, BA pilots. You know, the wealth of experience on the boat is there's people that can do everything. I guess my skill is in running things, so it's about using them to their best capacity, I guess.
Right, you okay?
Right, oh, I'm off the boat. And we're looking at a beaver bridge.
We're going to try and put a beaver bridge in here because this lock, which is western in Bath, one side is the Environment Agency's sluice, so a beaver could not possibly get up that side. And on this side, there's a lock gate, so the beavers couldn't get up. So what we'll do is we'll use scaffolding poles down here and then boards on it to create a bridge for the beavers to climb up, basically. So if you follow me a moment, Poppy, we'll go and look at the other side where there's one already. There are beavers all along the Avon, apparently. We haven't seen them this stretch. They are above Pulteney Weir, and I think you've seen them yourself, Poppy, before. There are ones further down, but we're trying to make their access easier so that they can continue to propagate, I guess.
I've been looking for evidence. I haven't seen any evidence as we've been going along.
No, that's right. And we haven't. We've seen otters down that end as well, and grass snakes, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I've seen grass snakes. In fact, I used to row in the rowing club that we passed on the corner there. And when we were building that landing stage into the river, you know, grass snakes were swimming past us, and mink, and obviously mink are an invasive species.
We're going up the steps now.
You might need two hands for this.
Oh, yeah.
These are big steps.
They're huge, yeah. Deep.
You okay?
Quite narrow, yeah. Into the wall steps, with the lock exposed to my left.
What we're going to build is something like that, boards going down into the water. We originally did this one for otters, so it's quite narrow. We're going to put another board on this one to make it wider, because beavers are quite bulky.
We're on the community spirit, and we're off. Bye.
Hi, I'm Trevor. I've been volunteering with the Bath Group for 10 years and I love every minute of it.
Just tell me what we're passing then, Trevor.
We're just going down a western lock. A lock was built in 1725, 300 years ago, and it canalised the River Avon from Bristol to Bath. And there's seven locks on the Avon from Bristol into Bath, which made Bath an inland port. And it was designed basically to move traffic and goods, but also the stone from Bath, which was eventually, they hope, was going to build part of the House of Parliament and other buildings in London. But they ended up by using a stone from Portland, not the Bath stone.
We're inspecting the safety lines along the side of the river. These, in case anyone falls in, they have something to grab on to pull themselves along to access the steps or to be safe. We're just checking that the lines are intact and don't need any maintenance.
And we've just travelled back from Salford back. We've just got back into Bath now. So we're just moored up on the River Avon, on the entrance to the Avon Canal. And this is the start of the hand-built canal. So we just come off the river onto the Avon Canal. The Canal and River Trust is a charity. We've got 2,000 miles of waterways, hundreds of locks, 900 bridges, 27 reservoirs, one of the biggest landowners in the country. We have 5,500 volunteers working for the Trust, and we need everybody's support. We're the only people actually working on the river, clearing litter and debris, and you saw the amount of debris which was in the hold of the boat today. So there's a lot of it going around, and every time we go down we nearly get a boatload of debris from the river. And we do the same on the canals as well. We can't come out when the river's in flood, so obviously last winter we could only get out on the river for about 4 days in 4 months, so it was in flood for the rest of the time, which again caused a huge amount of damage on the network. Of course all the flood damage comes down and we have to repair things and get rid of a lot of debris which gets pushed down, chairs, parasols, tents, everything you can imagine, really.
It looks like we've got one family of swans and cygnets trying to go up a lock, but we can't allow them.
This is now the second deepest lock in Britain.
This one that's got the cygnets trapped in it.
Yes, indeed. And the reason why it's so deep is it's actually double locked. So when they built this road bridge here, there was a lock here, which they took the lock away, which would bring them up to there. So they replaced it with a double lock at the end there. So that's why it's so deep. You'll see when we get inside.
So we're just behind the station, aren't we?
We are. It's just station just over there.
Yeah.
So now this canal bends around Bath, climbing. There's about six locks altogether. So you can see the next one up there. It's a staircase I mentioned earlier on. Climbing to the back end of Sydney Gardens. And then from Sydney Gardens, it goes off across two aqueducts into Bradford Avon, on its way across the country.
Well, yeah, you do get a very different view from up here, don't you?
Yeah, changes.
Cyclists, runners, people listening to music. So tell me about the sort of infrastructure. Now we're on the lovely, quiet Navan Canal.
Yeah, we're just approaching lock 11, I think it is, coming up the lock flight. So we're in a pound at the moment. And you can see the gates ahead of us, which are going to open in any second, I imagine.
Gates pretty old, are they?
Yeah, not necessarily. The lock is very old, but the gates can be a few years old, up to 25. They're usually replaced every 25 years.
What we're trying to do is reverse the boat into our mooring. So we've come into the turning pound here, and as I was just trying to manoeuvre myself, the wind caught my front end and has pushed me across into the embankment. So now we have to push my front end away so I can reverse back into our parking space.
The boat's been moved, it's now up on the canal. How long will it spend there and what will you do?
Well, we tend to spend 3 months on the river, 3 months at the bottom of the canal near Bath, and 3 months at Dundas end of the canal, which is right at the top. So we'll probably spend, you know, 2 or 3 months largely removing Himalayan balsam, which is an invasive species. And if we don't get it before it starts to flower, which starts to happen June, July, in a normal year anyway, the likelihood of it spreading is much increased. So, well, I'm in the Maldives soon because I go on a holiday. These guys will be pulling Himalayan balsam.
So you choose your holidays in June?
Exactly.
When the work's hard.
Or when there's anything hard to do.
Very fair observation.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed the day, and thank you all for letting me come along with you.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
We heard there from Mike Ashman and his team, including in order of appearance, Bill, John, Trevor, Rich, and trainee skipper, Peter. Now, our rivers have been in the news a lot recently, so we thought we should find out more about the state of the ones around Bath. Amy Wade is the River Engagement and Education Lead at BART, Bristol Avon Rivers Trust, and I started by asking her what BART does and how much area BART covers.
We are one of about 65 rivers trusts around the UK, and our catchment is the Bristol Avon, so the River Avon that flows through Bath and through Bristol and makes its way to the Severn Estuary, and all of the rivers that flow into that. So it goes right up into Gloucestershire, over as far as Devizes in the east, and then down as far as kind of Weston-super-Mare in the south. So it's a fairly big patch.
That is a big patch. So tell me what you do.
BART are a charity. We're about 20 of us now. We've grown a lot in the last few years, and we're doing our very best to improve the health of rivers in our catchment, to connect people better with the rivers, to improve like water quality, to renaturalize them and to make them thrive. And that is a difficult thing to do in the current state of the environment, unfortunately, but we're doing our best, and I think we're doing it as well as we can under the circumstances.
So let's just start then with the state of our local rivers.
Not great, unfortunately, and that is in line with what's happening right across the country. According to the European Water Framework Directive, which is a Europe-wide programme that we're still kind of part of, which monitors the health of rivers, only about 15% of rivers in the UK are said to be healthy. And in the Bristol Avon catchment, it's a little lower than the national average, a couple of percentage points lower. And that's looking at things like a whole breadth of things like the pollutants in the water, water quality, but also water industry infrastructure, bridges, all kinds of things. And us, along with the 65 or so other rivers trusts in the UK, are all trying to kind of turn that around. There's a lot more motivation from the public, from the government to change things and to improve the health of rivers.
Let's try and understand exactly what we mean when we talk about the health of rivers. What sort of things are you looking at?
So we're looking at, for example, nutrient levels in the water. So that's things like phosphates and nitrates. If they're very high, that indicates poor health. And those things come from runoff, from agriculture, from farming. also from like sewage overflow, also from runoff from people's gardens, quite a few different sources. And where there's high phosphates and nitrates, that indicates that other things won't be very good either. So perhaps there'll be low oxygen levels, there might be high bacterial levels. It's just not as it should be ecologically. If you were at an undisturbed, pristine stream high up in the hills, whatever, you would get low phosphates, low nitrates, high oxygen, low like sediment, not too like muddy. And that in those sorts of conditions, the wildlife thrive. As it is, oxygen's too low, phosphates and nitrates are too high. There might be other pollutants, things from pharmaceuticals, all kinds of forever chemicals that are getting washed into our rivers, which are going to be a huge problem to kind of get rid of and to dissipate. So there is like a horrible cocktail of chemicals, which is, yeah, sad and a little bit overwhelming to try and address, but we're getting there. The awareness is there, the will to change is getting stronger, and as I said, we have kind of lots of small successes. We might plant a load of trees next to a river somewhere that helps filter out the pollutants. The water quality might improve as a result of that.
So in terms of the ecosystem, everything that lives and grows in a river, what are we most worried about at the moment? What's most at risk?
Well, I guess as in any ecosystem, things that are at the top of the food chain are probably the most at risk. Our fish populations are not doing as well as they should be. We survey fish in various ways across the catchment and talk to anglers and other people who might keep an eye on fish populations, and they're in decline, which is a worry. And they can't get through like barriers in our rivers. We have so many barriers, like, so aside from the water quality issues, things like weirs and dams and tidal gates, fish that want to move up and down can't, which is also a huge problem. I guess fish are really at risk. And then you've got your higher order animals like otters and birds associated who would fish those fish out the river. But I don't know, that they're all at risk, the creatures in the rivers. I mean, some are more vulnerable to pollutants and bad water quality and stuff than others. Like, you might get specific species of mayfly that really don't cope well with polluted waters, and you lose those from various sites. So yeah, it's kind of a diverse assemblage of flora and fauna is at risk.
Tell me about the river detectives.
Yes, okay, this is a really nice project which has been running since the end of 2022. The river detectives are volunteers who go out and sample water quality of rivers and streams right across the catchment. So about 20 volunteers went out and collected samples to measure phosphates and nitrates, which, as mentioned, kind of indicate river health and water quality. So the volunteers go out, collect the water sample once a month and report back to us what they found, whether it's low or medium or high. There's a few like categories, and they also report on a few other things. And it's giving us a really interesting picture of river health right across the catchment, which is great. We're getting this really kind of valuable data, and we're actually displaying that data online, which anyone can go and see. Please do, if you're listening to this. It's riverhub.co.uk, and you could go there and there's an interactive map, and it shows you all the sampling points and gives you all the levels of phosphates and nitrates over time, and you can kind of play around with the data and have a look what's happening over time. What's that showing us, unsurprisingly, is that you do get a peak in these things around late summer, and that's because there's just less water in the rivers, so it becomes more concentrated. And also you could might get kind of start getting like rain events at the beginning of autumn that washes off a lot of those nutrients from like farmland, and it ends up in the river.
We've had a lot in the news recently about rivers, but presumably this is not a particularly new thing, or is it?
No, I don't know. It's not a new thing. Like, sewage has been overflowing into our rivers for a long time, many more years than has been reported on the news, and people just didn't realise and didn't think. I think people have been surprised about the extent of it. And now it's in the public realm. Suddenly the water companies are being like held to account a little bit more, which is great. I think the water companies, yeah, are doing their best to change things. It's difficult, isn't it? The infrastructure is just not there, but they need to be doing better. And we at BART want to work with them, like our local water company, Wessex Water. We do work with, they do fund some of our work, but we want to collaborate with them rather than vilify them. But we are very much aware that sewage in our rivers is, yeah, a big problem. But it's not the only problem. And I think sometimes that's what people think, or that's what it seems like in the news. There is so many other things we could be working on for our rivers. Like the barriers I mentioned is a really big problem.
Okay, let's think about the barriers. What could you do about the barriers? Could we actually remove weirs?
Absolutely, yeah. Remove them. Get rid of all the weirs.
Are we doing that? Is there a plan?
Yes, we can. There's so many weirs in our catchment, but it's expensive to remove them. They sometimes have like cultural value. People like them. And we have removed some weirs. We've done a few small-scale projects where we've removed weirs. And actually, the river looks great afterwards. When you have a weir, it slows the flow of water behind it. The river gets kind of too deep behind the weir. Next time you're kind of walking along a river and go past a weir, really look at the difference between the river before the weir and after. It's really incredible. Afterwards, you'll be much shallower. You'll get riffles, which where the water's kind of got movement in it. It'll be a lot more natural, and animals and plants like that below the weir much more than behind it. And as I said, animals can't get past. Pollution can get kind of stuck behind barriers. So if you have a pollution event in an area of river behind a barrier, the pollution doesn't like dissipate. And then if animals don't survive that pollution event, it's difficult for others to recolonize the area. So that's a problem too. So yeah, removing weirs is very much something we like to do where we can and where it's appropriate.
Okay, well, that's completely new to me that we need to remove the barriers. I had never considered that at all, that it's a problem for fish and animals that live in and around the river.
Removal's not the only option. There's various other things you can do. So you can build ladders so fish can move up and down the weirs, like salmon in particular migrate up rivers. And you can build like steps almost, or you can partially destroy a weir. So there's kind of a gap where fish can move through. Eels are also a big one that are in an endangered species. And about this time of year, they're migrating upstream to try and find places to settle. And they're little when they're migrating. They're only about 8 to 10 centimetres big. And you can build eel ladders, which we have done in various places around the catchment. So it might look like big brushes stuck to the wall where the eels can like wiggle up the bristles and make their way up to the top, because they're actually pretty good climbers, but a vertical wall's a bit difficult.
That's ingenious. I'm going to have a look out for that. I think you said at the beginning it can all feel a bit overwhelming. And I think to the general public, sometimes we don't know what to do. You know, we can see the rivers. We might notice more about the health of the river because we swim in them. But is there anything that we can do that would help?
Certainly. Yes, there is. Absolutely. So I was talking about in the summer, the river levels get very low. That can directly impact the invertebrates and the creatures that are there. It can also make any pollutants more concentrated. So in the summer, and this is a message you get all the time, but I don't think people link it to river health necessarily. If we all kind of really make an effort to use less water in the summer months, that can have an impact on river levels. I mean, there's so many of us using so much water. Things like cutting down showers, perhaps, if you don't mind, not flushing your toilet every time. And reusing water, having water butts, those kinds of things. So that's one thing people could do to help, particularly at a time like now when we haven't had rain for ages. And then on the flip side, when there's a lot of rain and we don't want so much rain to be flowing into our drains, into our sewers, that's what makes them overflow, is when the sewers become overwhelmed with rainwater, and that's when they overflow into our rivers, just the way the system's been built. And it's meant to happen only in extreme events and storms, but the reality is with all the new way more houses, way more people, and the sewer system not catching up, it overflows a lot if it rains at all. So what you can do to help there is have vegetation, have gardens. Water butts can be really valuable. But if you empty them in the winter when your plants might not need water, but you just keep it kind of empty. When it rains, they'll fill up slowly. Less rain is going down drains. Less rain is filling up the sewers. But you can even leave it in the winter when you're not really using it. You could leave the tap of it on like slightly with a hose going into your flower beds or something like that. And then there's other things you can do, not have a green roof if you're super committed, or a pond, or permeable paving, or if you were thinking to pave over your garden so you can fit your car to have off-street parking, maybe consider a gravel driveway so the water can get through.
That's really helpful, Amy. Thank you.
Amy Wade there. Finally, let's go for a walk now along the Bath River Line. I met up with Lizzie Venning from the Bath River Line project, which aims to improve Bath residents' connection with the River Avon. She was leading a walk for volunteers who want to become more involved, and we started out at Newbridge Park near the Park and Ride and next to Bath Marina. And then we walked all the way through to Bath Eastern.
So we are walking along the Bath River Line. We've just left Newbridge and we're heading all the way to Bath Hampton Meadows in the east. And following the line of what is known as the Bath River Line, a 10 kilometre linear park, taking people through the heart of Bath and appreciating all things about our river and a canal and the green spaces and the wildlife and the heritage along the route. Ooh, we are on quite a narrow path. On either side there are this really lush vegetation. We've got cow parsley. And just through the trees we can see the beautiful River Avon winding quite slowly, it looks like, but although it has quite a fast flow, going in the opposite direction, heading to Bristol and out to the Bristol Channel. So we're at Western Lock. We're right by Western Island, and this is a part of the river where the river goes one way and down a weir, Twerton Gates, and another way past Lock Gates. And this forms part of the navigation for the Canal and Rivers Trust routes. So if you're in a boat, this is where you come. This western side of the Bath River Line is the production industry side, really, where historically there were mills and now there are still large and very important industrial manufacturing companies along this side of the river. But it's interestingly juxtaposed with quite a bucolic, natural setting. You can hear the birdsong and the industry entwined with each other. We're outside the Loxbrook campus, Bath Spa University, which is now housed in the what was once a Herman Miller building, designed by Grimshaw. An amazing example of kind of that age of architecture, really like positive, hopeful for a new age, quite modernist. And yeah, we're now sort of coming in towards the city.
So we've just popped out by the bus station and train station, across the road, across the river. Now we're walking along the side of it, opposite the bus station. So tell us all about the River Line project, the Bath River Line.
So the Bath River Line project is a plan to create a 10 kilometre linear park all the way through Bath from west to east or east to west, taking in all the bridges that we know in Bath city centre, and Pulteney Bridge, going up Great Pulteney Street to Sydney Gardens, and then out following the canal and then rejoining with the river at Bath Hampton Meadows. It's a plan to create a green link for people and nature through the city, that first came to being as thought through the water space study in 2017.
So this is a council project, is it? You work for the council?
Yes. So I work for Baines Council. We are one of the partners in the Water Space Partnership, which includes Wessex Water, Canal and Rivers Trust, University of Bath, Bristol Avon Catchment Partnership.
And so the point of it really is to entice and encourage Bath residents and visitors to spend more time down by the river, I imagine.
That's the idea, because we believe that it's a space that should be enjoyed by everybody, whether you are a local resident or a visitor to the city. And we think that people care about the things that they see and enjoy. And we really want people to care about the river in Bath.
So tell us some of the things that you're doing to make the pathway a bit different. What will people see in the next year or so?
So the first phase of the project is looking to create pollinator planting, places to lock your cycle, your bicycles up, places to sit and watch the world go by, watch the wildlife on the river. And we're starting at the western section, so Newbridge, but actually predominantly the new planting and the new benches will be around Norfolk Crescent Green Park. We have a mural that's just in the process of being installed near to the Bath Artist Studios in the Army Reserve Centre, and that's an amazing celebration of wildlife and nature on the Bath River Line. And we've also got a huge amount of fun activities about to be available to everyone through the Festival of Nature, which is happening in June. There'll be opportunities to go paddleboarding on the river completely free, and there will be an exhibition, Life on Water, which is a collaboration with photography students at Bath Spa University. That's going to be at Rosebery Road Studios, which is on the river. And also there will be the same exhibition out in Kelson's Field, one of the green spaces along the river line. We're also doing a river-based display at the Southgate Centre, which we're hoping will show people in the centre of Bath that there is a river to explore and enjoy. And we'll also teach people about the amazing wildlife that you can see down at the river.
Tell us about some of the wildlife people will see.
Very excitingly, people have been sighting otters playing at Pulteney Bridge. You can also see beaver, definitely towards the eastern section, towards Bathampton, but actually there are beavers known to be towards Western Lock and Western Island. You can see kingfisher. I've seen at least three on visits that I've been along the river. You can see cormorant, heron, and if you're very lucky, you might be able to see one of the peregrines that lives in the steeple of St John's Church.
Tell me about all the green spaces that link link the river line.
Yeah, so a little bit like a necklace with jewels, the Bath River Line is actually a sequence of green spaces from Newbridge all the way to Bathampton Meadows. We've got some very well-known spaces such as Sydney Gardens, but also lesser known like Kelson's Field or Brassmill Lane Park, and places that people know of but maybe they are less used, Green Park, Norfolk Crescent, but they're wonderful spaces in themselves, and we really want to put care and attention into these lovely areas.
When will the Bath River Line project be finished?
How long is a piece of string, Pommy?
Okay.
We have the first phase hoping to be finished by September this year, but we are hoping to continue this project on into the future because there is still lots of scope for improvement and for care around this stretch of river.
So Lizzie, we're near the end. Tell us where we are now.
We're in Bathampton Meadows, in a beautiful stretch of open land right next to the river.
Thank you so much, Lizzie, for talking to me, showing me this beautiful space. Oh, thanks so much to Lizzie. And if you'd like to walk the Bath River Line too, it was very easy to get the bus back to the centre of Bath and then the park and ride.
At the end of the walk, Lizzie had arranged for Joanne Radway, the National Trust Ranger for Barthampton Meadows, to talk about their work there. Here she is.
Well, it's the first green corridor for the National Trust, and it's linking urban areas with the green landscape around. We acquired the land in 2022, and we're looking to improve the biodiversity and restore the land. In the eastern side, we have some rotational grazing, and we're resting some land, and we're getting new species coming up, like the cuckoo flower. And in the central area of the land, we've acquired recently two new fields, which we're hoping to improve the biodiversity there also. And on the western side, that's an area of land which floods a lot. So one of the main areas, one of the main benefits of the National Trust having this land is to keep it for the community and to allow it to flood, to prevent flooding further downstream.
And you've got it in perpetuity, I think, which means you don't have to do everything tomorrow. And just describe what we're looking at, because it's such a beautiful place.
Well, where we're standing now is just on the ramp at Bath Easton, and we're looking over a green area of land. There are some geese and a lot of sheep grazing, and we can see over to the Avon Wildlife Trust, which is a real success in biodiversity. We would like to change the kind of grassland management here a bit to try and improve the species that grow. And as I've mentioned, one of the land areas is being rested, and we're already starting to see lots of new wildflowers coming through, which is really exciting.
It's really beautiful. There are, when you say there are geese, I mean, there are dozens and dozens of geese, lots of sheep. And we're just below Brown's Folly. I can see it up there. And I think the skyline is over in that direction. And then round here, above the Bath Eastern, is Bannerdown.
Yes.
So thank you so much for all that information. That's fantastic.
You're very welcome. Do come back and visit. And one of the main areas we're trying to get increased access. So people who don't normally have access to green spaces, we'd love them to come down. And we often hold events, so keep a look on our website at Barthampton Meadows. And sometimes we run events for the local communities. And get in touch if you're interested in any volunteering.
Well, that's it for this episode of Footprints. Thanks to all who took part in the episode. And as usual, you can find links to all the items in the show notes. Do please email us with any suggestions or comments you might have at info@bathscape.co.uk. We'd really love to hear from you. And for any more information you need on Bathscape, visit the website bathscape.co.uk. Don't forget you can listen to all the previous episodes anytime you like, and please share as widely as you can with friends, family and colleagues. Thanks too go to the National Lottery Heritage Fund and Players of the National Lottery for supporting our work. Footprints was hosted and produced by me, Pommy Harmer, and I'll see you next month.